welcome to This Upbeat Life, the show where we take a light-hearted look at life, what makes us tick, and explore what makes people happy. I'm Simon JJ Green, and I'll be interviewing ordinary people from all walks of life, as well as looking at the latest in wellness, health science, nature, and the quirkier side of the health and well-being industry. Now please remember that the information and opinions shared on this podcast are for general knowledge and informational purposes only, and do not constitute medical advice. Now, let's get on with today's episode. And a warm welcome to episode 3 of This Upbeat Life. Today on Quick News, we've got kids and the sugar rush. For decades, a fun fact carved in stone tablets made of sugar. Or is it all just a myth? On The Real Deal, we'll have a quick nibble of chocolate heaven. And on Far Out Stuff, a tale of seven tigers. On Quick News, kids and the famous sugar rush. Fact or fiction? Well, if you've got kids, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Little Johnny and Jessica have been to a party and eaten a gigantic amount of sweets and chocolate between them, and now they're wired like two chihuahuas after 15 espressos, and they're bouncing off the walls. Yes, it's the dreaded sugar rush. Or is it? Great horny toads, I've been dying to play that sound effect for ages. So let's check out the myth versus the reality. Now, the myth says there's a widespread belief that sugar directly causes hyperactivity in children. Too much of the sweet stuff has them running around and screaming like loons. I mean, I do the same, but only when I can't get any donuts. But where did this phenomena originate? Well, back in 1978, when I was still in short trousers, a scientific article was presented in the academic peer-reviewed scientific journal Food and Cosmetics Toxicology. Here, two scientists had conducted some studies on children and sugar consumption, added two and two together, and basically came up with five. However, the reality is that later scientific studies, more rigorous, have largely debunked any direct link between sugar and hyperactivity in children. Not that parents are going to trust the science on this one. As the commentator Tom Chivers of BuzzFeed wrote, "They've seen the swivelling eyes and the frothing mouth of one party hat wearing, pass the parcel playing micro lunatic too many. You can show someone as much data as you like, but that sort of trauma overwhelms rational thought." But if it's not the sugar, what's going on? At this point, we can ask ourselves, well, where do kids usually get their sugar fixes? Yeah, birthday parties, holidays, fun places where excitement is already sky high. And if you couple that with small spaces, it's probably like throwing petrol on a burning fire. Now, there was a rigorous scientific study in 1994 that found no correlation between eating sugar and hyperactivity in children. None. But the study did find that the environment was a huge factor on behaviour. Plus, if we're honest, if we expect our kids to be a little bit crazy after eating sugar, we might just be seeing what we want to see. You know, a sort of self-fulfilling sugar rush prophecy and all that. Nevertheless, there are other factors that could be at work here too, such as lack of sleep or other stimulants like caffeine found in some sugary products like chocolate and energy drinks, and these we know can contribute to higher energy levels. Now, I know that there are parents out there thinking, what a load of old tosh. If my kids are anywhere near sugar, they become screaming demons. I've seen it with my own eyes. And there is actually some science to back this up. Mainly that some children may be more sensitive to dietary changes, including sugar or food additives. And while this is not typical, children with ADHD or other neurodevelopmental conditions may experience behavioural ups and downs due to complex interactions between their diet, environment, and their neurochemistry. And what this means is that while sugar isn't a direct cause of hyperactivity, rapid changes in blood sugar levels can impact mood and energy. A spike in blood glucose can be followed by a dip, you know, the old sugar crash, which may cause irritability, fatigue, or in some cases, seemingly erratic behaviour. Sounds a bit like me. Additionally, sugary foods often contain artificial colourings and preservatives, some of which have been linked to behavioural changes in sensitive children. There was a famous Southampton study in the UK in 2007 that found a mix of certain food dyes and sodium benzoate could increase hyperactivity in some kids. I should also point out that high sugar intake is linked to many negative health outcomes, such as type 2 diabetes, obesity, and poor heart and gut health. But instead of focusing on restricting sugar completely, we could look at some healthy alternatives, like fruit or yogurt, maybe even some veggie sticks with hummus. Even if the kids at a party look at it like Superman looks at kryptonite, at least you've tried, and the kids have been given the option. Now, we shouldn't forget to also encourage active play. You know, get the kids outside and moving, run around in the sun, play tag, go for a bike ride. Let them burn off that natural energy in a healthy way, rather than playing parkour inside your living room. So there it is, guys, the sugar rush. More myth than monster. And while we're talking about sugar, on the real deal, we've got Chocolate Heaven, a complete 180 on our previous segment, but hear me out. Oh yeah, it's official, chocolate is good for you. A scientist said so. But before you rush off to buy a wheelbarrow full of chocolate goodness and die happy, let's double check if there are any caveats to having your chocolate and eating it too. Yeah, you know there are. Dr. Chayakrit Krittanawong, try saying that three times quickly, from Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, conducted a study published in 2020 that looked at the connection between eating chocolate and heart disease, a study that sounds suspiciously like it was sponsored by Cadbury's or Willy Wonka. Now, according to his research, eating chocolate once a week may significantly reduce your risk of heart failure. That's right, chocolate. Not seaweed, not quinoa, not those virtuous little seeds that taste like disappointment, but chocolate. I think we should stop for a moment to salute this man, a man who has done his homework, a cardiologist, a researcher, and a modern-day hero. Now get this, the study, which reviewed data from over 575,000 individuals across multiple previous studies, yeah, it's that serious, found that weekly chocolate consumption was associated with an 80% reduction in the risk of heart failure. And that's not just a minor nibble of good news, but a full Dairy Milk bar of hope in a fancy wrapper. In addition, and this is where it does sound a bit far-fetched, it can help you lose weight. Chocolate can help you lose weight. Did I stutter? A neuroscientist called Will Clower, who is the CEO of Mediterranean Wellness, says a small square of good chocolate melted on the tongue 20 minutes before a meal triggers hormones in your brain that tell you that you're full. Finishing a meal with the same small amount 5 minutes after could also reduce subsequent snacking. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and suggest that eating an entire bar of chocolate before your dinner will have a similar effect. And honestly, I mean, who's got the willpower to just have one small square of chocolate, even if it is wafer thin? But before you take this as a cue to have a Cadbury's cream egg instead of your usual breakfast omelette, let's double check something. The magic seems to lie in weekly intake, not hourly. You see, I knew there'd be a catch. As with many good things in life, wine, sunshine, dogs, Ryan Gosling, balance is key. As you may have guessed, too much chocolate can cancel out the benefits, probably because of the added sugars, saturated fats, and the general law of too much of a good thing, etc. So as you stand at the chocolate fountain with a bucket, remember that moderation is a virtue and CCTV is everywhere. But still, people, chocolate. Now, the article didn't say what type of chocolate we should be eating to reap the hearty benefits. So I did the research for you, and since we've established that science is giving us a free pass to the chocolate aisle, let's dig a little deeper. It appears that not all chocolate is created equal, and from the perspective of nutritionists and current research, some types are far more heart-friendly than others. So here's a breakdown of the types of chocolate and their health merits. Coming in at the top, dark or bitter chocolate, obviously the hero of the hour, as recommended by nutritionists, cardiologists, and anyone trying to justify their cravings. The best choice is to go with something with around 70% cocoa content and above. But why is it good for you? Well, for a start, it's rich in flavonoids, particularly a thing called epicatechin, which supports blood vessel flexibility, reduces inflammation, and may improve blood flow. Also, dark chocolate is lower in sugar compared to, say, milk chocolate, and is also an antioxidant powerhouse, ranking high on the ORAC scale, which is oxygen radical absorbance capacity. But you knew that. But are there any caveats? Yes, indeedy there are. It's still calorie dense, a bit like me. So moderation does matter. It has a high cocoa content, so it's more bitter and less sweet, perhaps not to everyone's taste. Secondly, we come to raw cocoa or cocoa nibs, a purist choice, as recommended by whole food advocates, wellness influencers, and people who own those blenders, you know, the Vitamix or Vitamix or Vegemix or whatever they're called. But why is it good? Well, it's minimally processed, thereby preserving more flavonoids. It contains magnesium, iron, and fiber, and it has no added sugar. But it's very bitter, so it may not satisfy a sweet craving. So I say it's probably best used as a topping or mixed into smoothies and yogurts, etc. And then we have number three, everybody's favorite, milk chocolate, that guilty middle child, recommended by almost no one with a PhD, but heavily defended by many grandmothers and aunties. And why is it less good? Well, it does have lower cocoa content, meaning fewer flavonoids. It's much higher in sugar and milk fats, and it tends to contribute more to weight gain and metabolic risk factors. But it still offers some trace flavonoid content, better than nothing. That's if you're choosing quality brands with a higher cocoa percentage, for example, 40 or 50%. And finally, there's white chocolate, which is technically not even chocolate, shock horror, as recommended by the Milky Bar Kid, but no one in a lab coat. Why? Because it contains no cocoa solids at all. Nada, zip, only cocoa butter, sugar and milk. And it scores a big fat zero in the flavonoid benefits area, just sweet fatty indulgence. And my verdict, well, delicious dessert, yes. Heart health hero, no, not a chance. But here's a few guidelines on how to choose chocolate wisely for, in brackets, health. Look for a high cocoa content, around 70% or more. The higher the percentage, the more flavonoids and less sugar, but more bitter. Make sure there's minimal added sugar. Aim for chocky bars with less than 5 grams of sugar per serving, if possible. And then look at the ingredients list. The shorter the better. Cocoa mass, cocoa butter, a small amount of sugar, no palm oil, no artificial flavourers. And if you can, make it fair trade or organic. This is optional, but encouraged. Ethical sourcing, cleaner processing and whatnot. But just how much is a serving of chocolate, you may ask? Again, I did the research and it turns out that my idea of a serving of chocolate, you guessed it, is oh so different to the scientists on the interweb thingy. It turns out that Big Brother says a serving of chocolate is generally considered to be 4 small squares, equivalent to 20 grams. Some sources suggest a slightly larger serving of 6 squares as being good for your mind and body, while a serving of dark chocolate is often recommended to be about 3 thin squares, wafer thin, even. So, here's a final thought. If chocolate was a medicine, then dark chocolate is the pharmacist-approved pill. Raw cocoa is the holistic herbal remedy. Milk chocolate is the placebo, with, as we recently established, a mythological sugar rush, and white chocolate, well, that's just a delicious lie. So, if you're indulging once a week, as Dr. Krutanawong's study suggests, opt for dark chocolate in its purest, least processed form. It's a case where bitter truly is better. But on this upbeat life, I want to know, what is your go-to chocolate? Is it dark and brooding, smooth and milky, or wild and filled with peanut butter, pretzels, and possibly regret? What's your favourite brand? And before you write in and say Hershey's, please, for the love of all that is chocolate, try some British, Swiss or Belgian chocolate first so you know what you're missing. You can email me at thisupbeatlife@gmail.com or comment below. Your chocolate confessions will remain strictly off the record, unless they're hilarious. P.S. If you enjoyed this episode so far, share it with a friend who needs some sweet news, because life's better when it's a little bit more upbeat and a lot more chocolatey. And look out for the upcoming podcast where a bunch of us taste test some dark chocolate. In fact, actually, we're going to taste test lots and lots of different chocolate. We'll let you know. And in Far Out Stuff, A Tale of Seven Tigers. In April 2025, a Nevada man, 71-year-old Carl Mitchell, was arrested after 7 tigers were found in his home. Yeah, 7. Officials said he had been violating special condition permits and ordinances regarding the ownership of the big cats for several years. Did I say that there were 7 tigers found in his house? Now, when I first saw the story, I was sure that this was going to be a Florida man thing. But I checked, and Pahrump in Nevada is about 2,200 miles away. But nevertheless, this is interesting. But why would I be covering a story about tigers on a health and well-being podcast? Well, dear listener, it turns out that Mr. Carl Mitchell told the police that they were his emotional support tigers. Yes, he had 7 emotional support tigers. And in my eyes, that's an absolutely valid reason to have 7 giant kitty cats, if you're able to look after them. But apparently vets who attended the raid were not happy with the condition of the tigers. The police were also not happy, as they had found out that Mr. Mitchell was taking the 7 tiggers out for walkies in the community and then posting it on social media. But it gets better. Mr. Mitchell states that at least 3 of the tigers were rescued from Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, who is himself currently in prison after being convicted in a murder-for-hire case involving animal welfare activist Carol Baskin, though Exotic denies that the tigers are from him. The last known fate of the big cats is that they've been taken to a refuge in Arkansas until they are ordered to be released, if at all. Mitchell himself is currently out on bail and is arguing that there was a reason he didn't have a permit. He said he was a disabled veteran with PTSD and that his doctors had approved the tigers to work as support animals. Well, there you go. That's a get-out-of-jail-free card, if you ask me. So, my lovely listeners, if you could, hypothetically, have any support animal in the world, what would it be? I think mine would be an Alaskan wolf, though my dogs would probably have something to say about it. Now, drop me a line at This Upbeat Life and let me know what your emotional support animal would be. Until next time. Oh, hang on a minute. I feel an emotional support animal podcast coming on. Stay tuned, everyone. And remember, happiness is the best medicine. Okay, that wraps up the show for today. Thanks for your time and for listening. As always, I'd appreciate it if you could like, follow and subscribe to my show, This Upbeat Life, so I know I'm on the right track. And even better, leave a review and share it with your friends. Now here on This Upbeat Life, you can share your thoughts, you can ask questions, and be part of our growing community. And if you've got a story for Far Out Stuff, or you just want to get in touch with your health and wellness stories and ideas, then email me at thisupbeatlife@gmail.com and I'll read it out on the next show. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram as This Upbeat Life and on Blue Sky as Simon JJ Green. And until next time, remember, happiness is the best medicine.